The time has got to come where you draw the line at something, when you say, this is immoral and wrong and we're going to put a stop to it. Nobody will do it so long as law and order is gone. And this is what I maintain has happened in this country. Law and order is being consciously destroyed. You know this holler you hear, police brutality? Police brutality, I've had a little of it myself. But police brutality is a myth. There are some mean cops, but they're very rare. Most police officers that I've met are professionals. Most of them are pretty damn good. The police brutality business is to destroy your police department because that's the last thing between you and the takeover by the communists in the streets. That's what they've done all over the world. In order to do it, ladies and gentlemen, they have a little technique they call helping the oppressed. Now, in China, they went over there in China, and Mao Zedong was going to help the peasants. You people are probably too young to remember. The professors and some of the older people will remember, though. I remember what they told me right after World War II, after I got done fighting to preserve freedom. They told me that Mao Zedong wasn't a communist. He was an agrarian reformer, and he was trying to help the poor, oppressed peasants of China because they had it tough. And when people like me said, well, he looks to me like he's a communist, oh, no, 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 he's just an agrarian reformer. And then, of course, he took over, and he killed millions of people. Cut their heads off and hung them up in telephone poles dripping. They always talk about Nazi atrocities. I wonder how many pictures they've shown you of communist atrocities. Did anybody take any trouble? Any Jewish war veterans ever show you what they did in Russia? The Christians, 20 million of them. Khrushchev said they killed 20 million Christians. You hear about the 6 million all the time. How about the 20 million of us that they got? No movies, no tears, no violin music. So Mao Zedong took over and killed everybody, and he is a communist, and all the State Department and all the great geniuses in Eleanor said, oh, we can't imagine how this could happen. Who would have thought that he was a communist? The next guy that comes along, we did everything we could to get rid of Batista in Cuba. He was a Christian and a friend of the United States, but he was a dictator. So we got rid of him. We gave him arms and everything to help Mr. Castro. And Mr. Castro again. I was old enough and in the movement then, and I said, well, I think he's a communist. All the so-called right-wing nuts then were saying Castro was a communist. And Eleanor and Dean Rusk and Acheson and Truman, everybody said, why, he couldn't be a communist. He's helping the poor peasants. This is the truth. This is the second time around. And finally, they took him to the United States, and Ed Sullivan put his arm around Castro on television, said he's the George Washington of Cuba for the American people. And, of course, us nuts were still saying he's a red. He's a communist. And they go, ah, red baiter. You're screaming. You're nuts, Rockwell. You're sick. So he turned out it was he was a communist. The same technique. Now, notice the technique. They take a group of oppressed people. They are genuinely oppressed. The peasants of Cuba and the peasants of China. Then they, in the name of these oppressed people, they take over the government, and then they set up a dictatorship, a tyranny. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you have it going on right here, right under your noses, right here in America, and many of you are helping without knowing what you're doing. The oppressed here are black. I won't argue with that. They got a tough life, and they need help. But the commies have moved in and said, now we're going to help you good people, and we're going to have marches and lie-ins and crawl-ins and squirm-ins and wet-ins and everything we can. And they, all these things going on, and they get you people to go down to Selma and help them. And the guy that's leading it is Martin Luther King Jr. And I keep saying, yeah, but look at all the red organizations he's joined. He's got a communist assistance. He's a red. Why? How can you say that? He's for the colored people. He's for the oppressed. He couldn't be a communist. Same people that told you Mao Zedong wasn't a communist, couldn't be. Same people told you Castro couldn't be a communist. Now they say, Rockwell, you're sick. Martin Luther King couldn't be a communist. And yet I can show you the manuals where they show how they're going to overcome police departments, exactly how they're going to do it, and they're doing it. Step by step, they're doing here just what they did in China, just what they did in Cuba, and you're helping them. And the first thing you got to do it is to destroy law and order, destroy your police departments. We have the manuals where they show how they will actually overcome the riot-controlled police officers. They holler police brutality. Every time a police officer arrests a black man, he is in danger of losing his job, maybe his life, maybe being electrocuted because he killed him. Last time in San Francisco, the last riot when I was out there, was one of these colored brothers was robbing a place, and he was running off with the loot, and a police officer told him to stop, and he wouldn't. He shot over his head twice, and he still wouldn't stop, so he shot him. So they had the San Francisco riots over this. And the police officer lost his job. He got it back, but he lost it for a while, and he almost lost it permanently. He had to fight like the devil to keep it. Now, this, ladies and gentlemen, is going to destroy your country. You say, how come could you go from a brown man who did pretty little cartoons for Sir Brown to a Nazi? Well, because I found out that the communists are doing to my country just what they did to Germany in the 20s. Exactly the same. The same inflation, the same insanity, the same destruction of law and order, the same inflation is almost here, the same riots, the same bedlam, and the same Jews operating it. Even the same Jews. Same people that were over there are here now. The gas, 6 million, most of them are over here running the civil rights movement. Same people. I found this out to be a fact. There's no argument about it. It is a fact. And when you look at it as a fact, what are you going to do about it? Just let it go? Well, the only thing I could see to do it, first I became a conservative. And I promptly became thoroughly and totally disenchanted and disgusted with conservatives. They are the most cowardly bunch of finks that I have ever had to deal with. They're all busy calling me a communist now so as to prove that they're not Nazis. This is what the Birch Society says. This is what Haga says. All these nicey-nicey sweetie pants are all busy saying, oh, Rockwell, he's a commie. Don't go near him. They're absolutely disgusting. So I gave up being a conservative. I said, I'm going to fight. I'm going to tell the truth, the whole truth, every bit of it I know. And I have been. And ever since then, in spite of the toughness of the fight, I have been winning some of the most wonderful people I've ever met. People who are no cowards. People who are no hypocrites. Our country is drowning in hypocrisy and cowardice. Now, will you tell me how a cowardly, hypocritical conservative who says, I love Jews and Negroes are my best friends, how is he going to save his country from hypocrisy doing that? So I became a Nazi because I found out what a Nazi is. A Nazi is a man who believes in the white race above all things. Adolf Hitler said the white race is a master race. That doesn't mean we have to persecute anybody else, but it means we've got to keep our own country white. If Israel is a Jewish country and has the right to be Jewish, if Ghana is a black country and has the right to be black, why don't we have the right to keep a white country white and Christian? Well, how long do you people think you'd last if you went over there to Israel and campaigned in the Jewish schools in Israel against singing Jewish songs? And yet they're over here campaigning against us singing Christmas carols in ours. And in school after school, state after school, they get them stopped. You can't sing Christmas carols at school anymore. They won't tolerate it, but we must. I'm just simply saying Hitler discovered that this has gone far enough and he stopped it in Germany. There's only three places on the face of the earth that have ever whipped communism, not talked about it like Rabbit Welch or Billy James Haggis, but have actually whipped it. And those three places are Spain, and they hate Spain, Italy, and Germany. They whipped communism and got rid of it. And to do it, of course, they had a little difficulty with the Jews. Because the minute you go after communists, you're going to run into the Jews. Which is why the Birch Society can never get any place, because they keep saying how they love Jews and they hate communism. It's like saying you love to go swimming, but you hate to get wet. You can't do it. The result of all of this, ladies and gentlemen, they are destroying law and order. They're destroying our culture, destroying our civilization. And they have got millions of good, sincere Americans, like many of you out here, helping them to do it. Because you really believe you're helping to build a better world. This is the way they've worked all over the world. They tell you you're helping build a better world, and they play the violin. They tell you about these poor Jews in Germany and all the terrible things that happened. They don't tell you what the Jews did to Germany and what they're doing to our country here. And anybody who tries to tell you, then they use terrorism to shut him up. Any way at all. Cut down his audience, raise hell, do anything you can, but don't let him get to the people. Because I know in my heart, I'm telling the truth as well as I know how to do it. And I can reach yours. I do it at every school I go to. I'll get letters from Brown University starting tomorrow telling me I didn't dare say anything, but I'm with you. Every time I speak, this happens, but you're all scared to come up as a body and say, I think you're right, because of this terrorism. And this, ladies and gentlemen, has got to stop. No man in America should be afraid to say what's in his heart. And we are. That's why I'm a Nazi, because I am not any longer going to be a slave to fear. Be afraid to say what I believe is the truth. As I've said, if I'm wrong, show me and I'll quit. But quit calling me sick and calling me names and trying to punch me in the face. It will never stop me. It has never stopped our forefathers. No American in the history of this country has ever backed down because somebody beat on him or called him sick or threw stuff at him. No American worthy of the name, and I'm not about to. I'm going to wind this up, ladies and gentlemen, by saying this. The conservatives have a slogan which I think is despicable and defeatist. They say it's better to be dead than red. And the commies and the liberals have a slogan which I think is even worse. It's treason. They say it's better to be red than dead. We say this. You don't have to be red, and you don't have to be dead. Not dead, not red, dead reds. I thank you all very much. You've been most courteous, and I've certainly enjoyed deeply talking to you, and I'll be glad to answer questions. Turn around what?
Just turn around when you're done with one, I'll come up and
all right.
Okay?
Just give me one. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have the first question. Mr. Rockwell, will you please give us a brief definition of communism, parenthesis, not Judaism, end parenthesis, question mark. In my opinion, communism is the organized mutiny. I'm going to say this slow because it's a lot packed into a few words. In my opinion, communism is the mutiny of quantity versus quality. I think that communism is the organized mutiny of the inferior, biological by the Jews, against the people who have built civilization. That's what I think it is. Yes, sir. If the Russian Revolution was a Jewish takeover, why were so many Jews there persecuted? Why did so many emigrate? Do you know the name of the deputy... can't think of it. The deputy premier of the Soviet Union right now, his name is Dimshitz, and he's a Jew. The name of the head of propaganda is Ilya Ehrenberg, and he's a Jew. The Soviet Union army, the Red Army, is full of Jews. The Jewish Examiner for 2 weeks ago had a big article about how some Russian general was a Jew and was the top, most honored general in the Russian army. Do you know what they're persecuting in Russia? Not Jews. They are persecuting religion. Anybody who believes in religion, they're going after them. If you're a Protestant, you're getting it. If you're a Catholic, you're getting it. Whatever, you're Buddhist. Any religion is getting it. The Jews just holler louder than anybody else, so we hear about it more. Now, you may say to me, yes, but you can't be a Jew unless you're religious. I have to have me with me a book here to show you how foolish that argument is. A lot of Jews will tell you it's impossible for communism to be Jewish because a Jew believes in God, and a communist is an atheist. Well, true. Well, then I would like the Jews to explain something. Here is a book just out, costs $35, Who's Who in World Jewry. At the front of it, it says, this is an honor roll of the world's great Jews, finest Jews in the world. Listen to the list of people that put it out. The American Jewish Committee, the American Jewish Congress, American Jewish Historical Society, Anti-Defamation League, B'nai B'rith Hillel Foundation, Canadian Jewish Congress, and there's about 25 or 30 of them here, a lot more of them. Every great Jewish organization in the world is listed here as a sponsor of this book. Now I want to show you what they list in the honor roll as one of the great Jews that they're so proud of. Page 29. Here we are. On page 29 of Who's Who in World Jewry, which is supposed to be a religious group, here's Herman Aptheker, the chief theoretician of the Communist Party, on the roll of honor of world Jews. Now, doesn't this show you something, whether the Jews consider themselves a religion or are they a race? And the answer is, ladies and gentlemen, they are a group of people that you can recognize, some of them anyway, by their face. Not all, but most Jews. If I had a blackboard here as an artist, I could draw you a picture with a big long nose and you'd all giggle because it looked like a Jew. I can't draw a picture of a Protestant. I can't draw a picture of a Catholic. I couldn't even draw a picture of a Baptist, except maybe Martin Luther King. But you wouldn't... In fact, there's one Jew I could think of I could draw. You'd make a mistake. Sammy Davis Jr. You'd never think I was drawing a Jew. But my point, ladies and gentlemen, is the Jews keep putting out that they are just a religion, and yet they themselves list the top communist in America as a Jew. And he doesn't object. It's very proudly in the book. So what's going on in Russia, ladies and gentlemen? They are persecuting all people who have a religious belief. And the Russian atheist Jews are doing this to them. It's one bunch of Jews after the other bunch. And this is not anti-Semitism. So much for that question. Mr. Rockwell, if a Negro, Jew, Italian, or Irishman came up to you or spoke before you saying that all white Anglo-Saxon Protestants are filthy subversives, wouldn't you want to hit him? Yes. Could you please discuss and enumerate any positive feelings you have toward the Negro and Jew? That is, any characteristics they have which you don't object to. I have no objection to the fact that the Negroes, in my opinion, and this, of course, is that you're not supposed to say this, but I think they're biologically inferior. Not all of them. You may have some here who are smarter than I am. I'm talking about the average ghetto Negro. The great mass of Negroes just can't make it in a modern urban society. That's not their fault. It's not mine. But the way to remedy it is not to take your rights away and give it to the Negroes, because it won't help either one of you. It pulls everybody down. I, however, will say this. The Negroes have a tremendous sense of rhythm. They're great singers. They're great dancers. They got a lot of positive things you can say for them. This is what the guy asked me. What positive things can you say? I think the Negroes in their own country could be very happy. And the Muslims for a while wanted to do that. And I've gone this far. If we have to do it to solve the problem, I want to separate. I don't believe segregation will work, and I don't think I know integration won't work. The only solution I see is separation. And if we can't get them to Africa, I'm willing to give them part of the United States, namely Miami Beach in Brooklyn. Now, as to the Jews, my favorite subject. As to the Jews, my dear friends, they ask me, what positive things can you say about them? I will say this. I will not deny for 10 minutes that I think Jews are superior on the average. I'm not saying all Jews are, but the average Jew is superior to the average Gentile in business. I think they're damn good businessmen. And there's no getting around it. They succeed time and again where our people fail. They're good businessmen. What I object to is the way they use it. And let me give you an example. Through the Jewish business genius, they have managed to rise to the top of an industry which now controls the minds of America. The most powerful medium in the world is television. You have only 3 television networks, just 3. NBC, CBS, and ABC. NBC, the chairman is Robert Sarnoff, a Russian Jew. ABC, the chairman is Leonard Goldenson, a Russian Jew. CBS, the chairman is William Paley. He's listed in here as William Palinsky, another Russian Jew. You've got 3 Jews that control everything you see on the television. And as a result, even though 85% of the serious crime in this country is committed by Negroes, have you ever seen a Negro criminal on the TV? I never have. Every time you see a Negro, he's a judge or a lawyer or a very great man. And on the contrary, on the opposite hand, whenever I see a whodunit, one of these things like Perry Mason, and you're trying to figure out who's the dirty rat that did it, I wait till I hear a guy come along and says, ah, hi, y'all, I'm from Alabama. He done it. That's the guy. He's usually unshaven and dirty and filthy, southern white Christian Protestant, no good. That's what's happened to your television, because what I'm getting at, the Jewish businessmen have used their genius to get to the top, which is their privilege, because I believe in free competition. But then they have used or misused it, abused their power to brainwash our country so that you don't anymore know what's going on. They have had every national figure on the television, even Leroy Jones I saw him on, the man who produced the toilet with a bunch of Negro boys urinating on a white boy's face in a urinal. They had him on television the other night with Norman Mailer, who is the, like they used to have in Rome, they had guys who divined the future by looking at birds' entrails. Norman Mailer is a bowel movement investigator. And he says that if he can examine a man's stools for color and size and odor and movement, he can tell you the color and the nature of the man. This is what they had on television, but not once have they ever let any of the tapes they've made of me get on this national television, so you could judge me for yourselves. These Jews don't want people to listen to Rockwell. They want you to read Playboy magazine and read what some guy says I said. They don't want you to hear George Lincoln Rockwell or see him. So my answer is to those 2 things, the Negroes are good singers and runners and fighters and a lot of other things like that. The Jews are good businessmen. If the Jews are the leaders of the communist movement, why do the communists support the Arabs against Israel? The man says, if I'm going to either run this orderly or I'm not going to speak. If the Jews... Would you like me to quit? I'll be glad to quit. All right. Well, then tell these Jews to shut up and I'll go ahead. Thank you. I am not going to speak in the middle of disorder. When the Jews are quiet, I'm going to continue. Now's your chance, Jews. Go ahead and let the Christians... If the Jews are leaders of the communist movement, why do the communists support the Arabs against Israel? Well, first of all, not all the communists do support the Arabs against Israel. The largest communist party in the whole Middle East is in Israel. 25% of Israel is communist. So this question answers itself on its face. The communists do not support the Arabs against Israel, except Red China. And I might say this. I believe communism is rapidly disappearing from the world as an issue. I think the issue is rapidly going to become race. The Red Chinese are not half as much communists as they are colored nationalists. Our colored people are saying, we don't want to go over and kill colored Vietnamese. Red China and Red Chinese strategy is to go to Africa and Asia and put all the colored people together, and the Russians have said so. The ambassador to France, when France recognized Peking, the Russian ambassador to France said, do not the French realize that Mao Zedong wants to put Africa, Asia, and China together against all whites, including Russia? So that I think what's happening, when you find that you say communism is supporting the Arabs, it's Red China is supporting the Arabs, because the Arabs and that whole colored community there consider themselves colored much more than Arabs. When they talk about imperialists, they mean white imperialists. When they talk about colonialists, they mean white people. Do you realize how many Negroes the Russians have been thrown into snowbanks and deep freezing up there in Moscow? You don't hear too much about it, but the last Negroes from Africa and the last Red Chinese are being kicked out of Russia. They're colored. They're having the same problems that we are. So when you say communism is supporting the Arabs, it is not communism, it's the Red Chinese.
Next question. This will be the last question, I'm told. How is your presidential campaign for 1972 coming along? Getting a lot of senators and congressmen elected with the open title of Nazi, as you promised in your interview of 1960 with a New York radio station. I would say this to you, you have only to look around the world. My kind of people are getting elected. Whether they have my title or not doesn't make too much difference at this point. Lester Maddox either has made it or came close to it, and he's a friend of mine, I know him, and he's a great man. All over this country, people are beginning to get fed up with forced race mixing. People are getting fed up with just what I said they would. Now you say, how's my campaign coming? My campaign depends on two things that I predicted back in 1960. Race riots. In 1960, there hadn't been any, and I said they would be all over this country. They are. Now I tell you, the next thing I need, and the only thing I need now to win, is inflation. They have already taken the gold from your paper money. Then they took the silver from your paper money. Now they've taken the silver from your silver. And you've got phony money. This is just what they did in Germany, ladies and gentlemen, and catastrophic inflation is not far ahead, and as I've told you, when you finally get a good dose of it, when you get all you're going to take of Negroes pushing you, and when you get all you're going to take of rotten, phony money that's worthless, then you're going to be looking for somebody to put a stop to it. You're not going to be looking for talk. You're going to be looking for somebody to fight. And this is what I'm going to do for my country. I did it in World War II in Korea, and I'm going to do it again. Thank you very much, Lee.
Right.
And now, a final word about the organization that made this series of tapes possible, the National Alliance. Your speaker, Kevin Alfred Strom. You who are listening to this tape, and I who produced it, do not know each other. I do not know how you came upon this speech. But what I do know, with a fair degree of certainty, is this. You share with us a concern for the future of our race and nation, for our children, and for our children's children. You share with us dismay and revulsion at the growing degeneracy of our society. You share with us profound misgivings about the wisdom of turning our beloved America into a third world slum. One thing that should give you some consolation is the fact that you are not alone. More and more Americans are withdrawing from the political process, believing it to be an exercise in futility, a farce in which the voter has no real choice. On America's campuses, the dictatorship of the politically correct is being openly challenged. Winds of change are starting to blow. With each new hate crime law, with each new affirmative action program, with each new interracial situation comedy, with each new gun confiscation law, and with each new wave of third world immigration, the vast and angry army of the disaffected grows. What then can be done? This vast army of disaffected white Americans presents us with an opportunity. But the task before us is immense and difficult. The power and money of the enemy seem limitless. Even taken as a whole, the patriotic forces in this country at this time are totally unequal to any contest for power. These cold, hard facts, unpleasant as they are, help us refine our strategy and direct our efforts toward what is actually possible. As Dr. William Pierce said at the first General Convention of the National Alliance, our task is not to persuade a numerical majority of the American population that we are right, but rather to build the numerical minority whose values coincide with ours into a majority of will and determination. For it has always been dedicated minorities that have been the makers of history. The majority will stand on the sidelines in every conflict until they are forced to act. Of course, these facts do not free us from the responsibility to recruit large numbers of people, many tens of thousands more than we have now. But we must always keep in mind that we are recruiting an elite, a vanguard group that will be able to build a professional organization and an uncompromising movement that one day will lead the masses of our people out of their slavery and degradation. There is much to be done. The National Alliance needs many different kinds of members. We need writers and carpenters, physicists and photographers, architects and actors, businessmen and artists. We need those who see the necessity of our task and are willing to give everything they've got to the effort. We need members who can inspire that kind of dedication in others, members who will lead lives of exemplary sacrifice and devotion. You may think we're asking a lot. Too much, perhaps. We do this because we are serious about winning this struggle for our people. We do this because we can't afford to waste our efforts. The stakes are too high. Members who will bring real resources, skills, and abilities to the problems at hand, and we ask for members with exceptional dedication, patience, and persistence, because nothing less will do the job. Presently, the National Alliance has, through National Vanguard Books, the ability to inspire and educate the best elements of our people. We will continue this effort on an ever-increasing scale. We will select from these individuals those who are willing to become supporters or active participants in our efforts. We will expand our capabilities, not only increasing the publication and distribution of printed materials, but branching out into other areas, including radio and television. National Alliance spokesmen will appear more and more frequently on college campuses, on radio talk shows, and on television news programs. As our capabilities increase, we will begin to produce our own radio and television programs to be aired on cable systems as well as on purchased commercial airtime. And always, the impression conveyed to the public will be one of strength, intelligence, truthfulness, and professionalism. I hope that you will subscribe to National Vanguard and that you will avail yourself of the marvelous educational opportunity offered by the National Vanguard Books catalog and its recommended reading list. As you examine and consider the books and magazines that we publish and distribute, and as you hear the words of great patriots in this series of speeches, I hope you'll come to understand that no other organization has the skilled personnel, the seriousness, the understanding of fundamental principles, the fighting spirit, or the realistic chance for ultimate success of the National Alliance. Despite the decadence of our nation and our race's peril, you and I are lucky to be living in these times. Unlike the nationalists of Eastern Europe before the fall of communism, we do not have to work in secret. Our publications are not yet outlawed. Our freedom of speech has not yet been completely stifled. But if we fail, if patriotic white Americans do nothing, then all these things, and worse, much worse, are coming. If you think you have what it takes, then I'm asking you to join us. Whether you can best serve by joining your efforts to ours here at the National Office, or in the role of an activist and spokesman for our cause, or as an influential member of society, helping our work with influence and intelligence from behind the scenes, or as a supporter, providing the necessary financial and physical infrastructure that makes all our other work possible. You now have an opportunity to become a part of our great movement for the cleansing and restoration of our nation and civilization. Future generations, if there are any, will look with favor upon those who did their duty. Write us for membership requirements. Our address is National Alliance, Post Office Box 90, Hillsborough, West Virginia, 24946.